Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. It's time for our weekly books discussion, and joining me in the studio today to go through some literary picks is the founder of Unbound Publishing, John Mitchinson. John, welcome to the programme.
Hello.
We've got three fascinating novels here, possibly all for different reasons. It's tough to know what order to do them in, but I would not hasten to say that we are saving the best for last here. But we can wink at each other across the studio for that.
Indeed.
We're going to kick off with Nutshell by Ian McEwan, which has been widely reviewed and quite disparately reviewed, I think.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm not surprised. Ian McEwan is a major writer. He's a prize winner. He's also a effortless bestseller. I mean, it's that rare thing. I mean, to be a kind of a literary writer and also to sort of enter the charts at sort of number one is a pretty extraordinary achievement. Yeah. So you're going to get people knocking it. But I have to say, I have had my problems with McEwan in the past. I have loved him. I have kind of been disappointed. But I have to say, I think this is a Nutshell is just a remarkable, brilliant little book, and one I think that, and even if you don't think that you like Ian McEwan, I would sort of press it on people because it's a virtuoso performance. I mean, you know, perhaps we should talk a little bit about the.
I was going to say this is the central conceit of the book. The central conceit is not without its. I think this is why some people have had a bit of a problem with
it. Sure, it's essentially comic, although you know, there is a dark story. It is Hamlet in utero. The whole book is narrated by a fetus, an 8.5-month-old unborn child. It's set in a decaying house in St. John's Wood. The state of Denmark is rotten.
Yep.
It concerns, obviously, the father of Hamlet, not that he calls himself Hamlet in the book, but that's what it clearly is. And his mum, Trudy, is having an affair with Claude, the uncle, who's a property developer. The father is a rather feckless poet and publisher, and basically the whole of the Hamlet story is played out. But it's played out brilliantly, I think, by the conceit of having it narrated by a child that isn't born. Everything you can imagine that is kind of grotesque and sort of ripe for comic potential. There's a marvellous piece where he says, "My father's rival's penis is inches from my face." So he's literally there for the infidelity of his mother's infidelity. It's so cleverly done. It's so cleverly worked out. It's also, because it's McEwan, he is a brilliant technical writer. And it's there's a murder that is being plotted.
Yeah.
And he, as the son of the father, the wronged father, is attempting to prevent this from happening. I won't give you the ending away. It's just, there is so much in it to love. That he is like Stewie.
I was going to say, a lot of people thinking Family Guy here.
Yeah, he is like Stewie. He's kind of something slightly demonic. He's one of the things he particularly loves is his mother's wine. The one thing he does admire about his uncle is his uncle's wine cellar. I mean, it's kind of obviously mad. He gets to talk about wine. He gets to talk about property and the absurdity of property prices in London, because obviously his father's house, the developer uncle, evil uncle, wants to sort of take it over, and it's worth about £8 million. There are kind of perorations on inequality, you know, in a kind of modern sort of, from a modern sort of Marxist perspective. So the whole idea is all of modern life is there. So he is kind of imbibing all of this. He can't see, but he can hear and he can absorb, and he loves music, and he's kind of, you know, he's fond of Beethoven. He's very fond of Ulysses. It's this super educated kind of fetus attempting to influence the life of a sort of fairly rackety mother. You'd think this is almost a kind of an Amis sort of conceit, you know, Amis in his Time's Arrow mode. But I have to say, whatever else you could criticise Ian McEwan for, his technical command, the language in this book, the fact that he plays, he reproduces kind of soliloquies from Hamlet. There's that anyone who loves that play, and it's, let's face it, it's the first great modern play. Yeah. The Hamlet kind of character is the first great introspective character in literature. So to have a one long monologue of a novel is a delight. I really enjoyed it in a way that, you know, I always pick up with a slightly slight sense of apprehension. There are times when I think McEwan is unmatched in his storytelling ability, but there are times
you
also when
I think he's funny. Actually, I'm glad that he's funny in that
it
way.
It is funny. It's much. I mean, I, you know.
If only the baby were called Ian, and then we could have a kind of Kingsley to Martin Amis. Stop buggering about and drawing attention to yourself and buggering about with the reader moment. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. But there is, I have to, as I say, there really isn't a, I think technically you can't really fault it.
Well, high praise indeed for the, well, it sounds absolutely fantastical, both literally and metaphorically, Nutshell by Ian McEwan. It's out now. It's published by Jonathan Cape. I suppose it is one of those pick it off the bookshelf. And I suppose it's quite a slim, quick read. And I suppose it's got, despite it being a precocious baby talking about Marxism and Brexit and Beethoven and Chateau Latour 64, it is a digestible read. Next, we're going to be talking about Commonwealth, John, by Anne Patchett. She's sort of 8 novels into her career. She's,
yeah, I think this is her 7th novel.
Is it?
And,
right.
And it's very, very...
I'm giving her a deadline then.
Well, she will write more. I'd not read her before, and I felt this is a bit of a gap. I mean, she's one of those writers who gets recommended regularly. She's won more or less every prize that's going. I have to say, I'm really, really pleased that I read it. I absolutely... This is, in a strange kind of way, when you want to say to someone, what is fiction for? What can fiction do that nothing else can do? I would almost give this to somebody and say, this is, in all its potential, the ability to summon a world that is entirely believable, to trace a complicated skein of character relationships over 5 decades, to also leave you feeling more positive, warmer about the human condition. And she kind of ticks all those boxes. She also turns out to be, which I didn't know, a kind of a heroine. She's opened her own bookshop.
I was going to say, she's a bit of a defender of the faith of books and reading herself.
Absolutely. She's opened Parnassus Books in Nashville because there wasn't a good bookshop left in Nashville. She's fearsome about Amazon. She says, you know, you can't come in here and listen to my staff and drink my coffee and then go home and order the books on Amazon. She said, I will hunt you down. I will hunt you down.
I see you taking a picture of the spine and then Googling it to see how much you can get a discount for.
So an admirable woman who is famously, I mean, what she's interested in is kind of understanding goodness and how goodness can change people's lives. But the books are, there was nothing I found sentimental about this book. It starts out with it is a family saga. It is based on her own experience. It starts with an absolutely bravura party in 1964, a christening party for one of the central characters of the book, Franny. And what happens in that party is that a man called Albert Cousins arrives with gin. He's sort of kind of slightly escaping from his own less happy marriage. He gets everybody at the party drunk, and he ends up kissing Teresa, who is the mother of Franny. And this sets off, I mean, it's one of those wonderful, you know, it's so beautifully choreographed, you know, you're totally carried through this first chapter. The party is brilliantly realised. And then you realise that this is the moment, I think Albert Cousin says, this was the start of his life. And what happens is the two families disintegrate and reform into, so they've got 6 step-siblings, both the family sort of, as I say, dissolve and reform. And then over 5 decades, you have the stories of the intersections. They come together each at regular points in Virginia. The story starts in Los Angeles. So it's a kind of...
Is it a book of set pieces?
I think it is kind of episodic.
Yeah.
But the Commonwealth of the title is a sort of an attempt at a great American novel through the prism of a sort of a slightly dysfunctional family that's been torn apart by divorce and then thrown together. But the portrait of the interrelationships between the siblings, the development of their individual lives, and then the core of it, when she's in her 20s, Franny, working in the 80s, late 80s, working as a cocktail waitress, she meets a novelist, a grizzled novelist in his 50s called Leo Posen. And he writes the story of her family life that she tells him.
So she narrates. She tells him maybe over gin one.
And that becomes quite a successful novel called Commonwealth, and it gets turned into a movie. But part of what, you know, obviously novels within novels, novels about novels. Mm. But she manages it so brilliantly because what becomes interesting is what Franny hasn't told Leo about the truth and the complexity of the family life, the stuff that she keeps back from her for herself. It's quite a long read, but at no point did I feel that I was, oh, I wish I was back with this character or that character. It seemed, again, just perfectly choreographed. She writes in a, I think, rather... I mean, it's not an adorned style, you know. There's nothing fancy about it. But it is, like I say, it's almost. I mean, she's very.
I love what you said at the beginning about it being a piece of kind of about a piece of primal communication, and that if a Martian would come to Earth and wonder why we were all had our heads in these bits of paper, you could show them this and tell them why.
Absolutely, it's full of deep psychological acuity. It's great on family. It's interesting on loyalties. You know, how family loyalty becomes kind of community loyalty, becomes national loyalty. How those things get, you know, at a time when America is sort of in flux, it seems to me to be an incredibly positive and powerful book, and one which, as I say, I hadn't read. I will go back and read the Ann Patchett backlist now. I know Bel Canto was the one, I think, that won the Orange Prize, and but it's ambitious without being in any way kind of experimental in that sort of, you know, capital E, I'm trying to impress you kind of way. Really, really remarkable book.
I cannot wait to get my teeth into this one then, John. It's Commonwealth by Ann Patchett. And yeah, as I say, she's sort of prize winning. She's seven novels in.
Yes, seven novels in.
And it comes in at under 350 pages or something. It sounds like a great American novel, but, you know, in edited form, sounds digestible to me.
I mean, it's a book that I think you don't notice that you're getting through it. It's big, and it certainly makes you think long after you kind of close it.
Well, we're going shorter form here in that case. You Took the Last Bus Home by Brian Bilston. He's been described as the Banksy of poetry, right?
Yeah, he is. The poet laureate of Twitter.
The poet laureate of Twitter.
You know, I declare an interest because he's an unbound author. Guy. But it's just every now and then.
So I'd heard of him, and I'd heard this phrase, the Banksy of poetry and the rest of it. And I swear I didn't really know much. So upstairs, I've gone through certain of his poems.
Yeah.
And that man has some great... I mean, talking about arch communication, he's the man.
I mean, you know, it's not poetry in the sense that Ted Hughes or Seamus Heaney is poetry, perhaps, but it is poetry, I think, in the sense that it is about words and communication and subtlety and playfulness, you know, almost more like a sort of metaphysical 17th century sense. He's great at shapes on the page. Mm. He's got Scrabble boards in this book. He's got Venn diagrams. He's got Excel spreadsheets. He finds poetry in the most ludicrous and everyday quotidian places. Some of the poems are quite moving. Some of them are brilliantly witty. I mean, the poem that's the title poem of the book is typical. You know, that he's very good at building you up and then taking you away. It's haiku. He's the master of haiku. But it's You Took the Last Bus Home. You took the last bus home. Don't know how you got it through the door. You're always doing amazing stuff. Like that time you caught the train. I mean, it seems quite.
There is something of the David Shrigley's about him somehow. I'm reminded of this great sort of abrupt witticism to him. A very concise way of words.
And it's one of those books, I think, you know, we've gathered together, it looks like a proper volume of poetry. But the fun is more or less non-stop.
I like one of his best known ones is No, You Cannot Borrow My Phone Charger.
Oh, that, yeah.
Which is very good. And I'll just give people a taste. I'll help yourself to whatever you'd like from my larder, my Stilton, my sherry or my port, if you'd rather. But no, you cannot borrow my mobile phone charger. So it has this kind of... There's a sense of a bit of a limerick to some of this stuff as well.
He does limericks, he does haiku, he does every form. He does marvellous palindromes, you know, the ones where they're all the... You know,
Are you familiar with the work of the poet McTeague? From the Monty Python's Flying Circus, because I did see slight elements of it veering into what's 20 quid to the bloody Midland Bank about some of this stuff.
I mean, there is definitely, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover, but neither can you cover a judge with a book. unless the book is a foldy-out one with a map or something. I mean, the silliness I think is very good.
And what does he like to deal with, this mysterious bard of Twitter?
He's an absolute delight to deal with, and he is. I think he really tries very hard to find. He's done it for those people who pledge. He's done a wonderful selection of Christmas poems.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think he will be doing poems. I mean, he can do them more or less to order. But it's the creativity. As I say, I love the fact that he can take look at it. Only he could have looked at a Excel spreadsheet and thought, there is poetry. There is poetry.
There is rhyme and meter in that.
There is poetry to be made here. And I don't know. I guess the haiku for doomed youth, cutting out pop stars from last week's NME with rock, paper, scissors.
See, it's too good, isn't it? It's very good.
I mean, I'm afraid it is, and certainly what we always felt when we were, is that this is the thing that you would, a lot of them are visual, so they don't really work so well when you read them.
Yes, it seems like a couple of the Venn diagram one.
The Venn diagram is
and
really clever.
The refugee one, which was very famous, which was that can be 24 lines long, can be and palindromic.
Actually, you read it one way,
yeah,
and then you read it the other way, and it makes it completely changes.
And that was a rather wonderful mission statement.
And he's
as well.
he's very literary. Lady Philately's lover, she would invite him in for secret binges. He would lick his finger, then moisten her hinges.
On that note,
anyway, Brian Bilston, he's an enigma and a delight. But the book, I think, is I would hope it's a stocking filler. It's definitely a Christmas morning. Here's another one.
Yes, it is one of those ones, isn't it? It's a good one. You took the last bus home. I love it when you do wonderful things like that. For example, when you got the train, to paraphrase the great work of Brian Bilston. And before that, John was talking about Commonwealth by Anne Patchett. And we kicked off by Nutshell, new from Ian McEwan. John Mitchinson, thank you very much, as ever, for leading us a merry dance through these wonderful books that you bring in under your arm and educate us every week with them. Thank you very much. That was the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. My producer was Holly Fisher and my researcher was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when we'll be joined by the film critic Anna Smith. But for the time being, thank you very much for tuning in.